Some coaching power rankings involving Dan Campbell and a guy in the best shape of his life for the Lions. Let's do this. It's Locked On Lions.
You are Locked On Lions, your daily Detroit Lions podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
On the final day of May, on a Wednesday, May 31st, into Thursday, June 1st, it is Locked On Lions, everybody, on the Locked On Podcast Network. Indeed, your team every day. Matt Derry with you. Lions back on the field today in Allen Park for OTAs. There was a guy that impressed today and turned some heads. We'll get into that. How about Aleem McNeil and his weight loss and what he has done to dedicate to transform his body? We'll get into that discussion. And also, our buddy Ross Tucker from the Ross Tucker Podcast did his NFL head coaching rankings. Where does Dan Campbell sit between 1 and 32? All of that today here on this Thursday, I should say Wednesday edition of Locked On Lions. Thanks for making us your first listen. Checking us out wherever you get your podcasts. Shout out to all the everydayers out there. We appreciate you guys and girls that listen, follow the show each and every day right here on Locked On Lions. You can follow us on Twitter at Derry Speaks, at Locked On Lions, the Matt Derry Facebook fan page, and we are free. Watch it for free and subscribe on the Locked On Lions YouTube channel. Thanks to Trevor Sikkema from PFF, joined us yesterday in case you missed yesterday's program. Very, very interesting. I've gotten a bunch of texts about these Ross Tucker rankings. And, you know, when you talk about Dan Campbell, we can dive into the Lions head coach a little bit here. Everybody seems to love him. Everybody is thrilled with what Dan Campbell has done, especially when you talk about changing the culture, leadership, the value that he brings to the players and to the locker room. But, you know, when you get into head coaching rankings, and we're in that season now, we're approaching June, it gets a little bit slow. There's not a lot of free agent movement now. Most of the free agents have signed. Draft is over. We're getting ready for training camp. And these lists and these rankings start to come out. And so yesterday, a couple of different people, including my buddy Johnny Scoops, hit me up and shared the Ross Tucker head coach power rankings from 33rd team. We've had Ross on the show many times. I think he's a very, very good analyst. You hear him on Westwood One, on Dan Patrick's show, the DA show on CBS, and also the Ross Tucker podcast. So his head coaching rankings, Ross Tucker, just to give them to you, top five, Andy Reid, Bill Belichick, Mike Tomlin, Sean Payton, and Nick Sirianni. I'm not sure I would have Mike Tomlin in the top five. I'm not sure Bill Belichick is still a top two coach anymore, but that's what he's got. Kyle Shanahan at six, who I think is an excellent coach. Sean McVay at seven. Brian Daboll at number eight after 1 year with the Giants. Pete Carroll, nine. Doug Peterson, 10. John Harbaugh, 11. Zach Taylor, 12. Mike Vrabel, 13, which I think is low for him. I think he should be higher. Mike McDaniel, the Dolphins, 14. And then it starts getting interesting. Ross has Kevin O'Connell ranked 15 and Dan Campbell 16 and Matt LaFleur 17. So he's not a real big fan of the NFC North, is he? But Kevin O'Connell at 15, Dan Campbell sitting right smack dab in the middle at 16. Are there any coaches on this list from 1 to 15 that I read off that you could argue Dan Campbell is better than and you would take over these coaches? I don't see any. Brian Daboll did such a good job with the Giants last year and took a basement-dwelling New York team, and they went to the playoffs. So, yeah, I have no issue with Brian Daboll being ahead of Dan Campbell. The one that will get the most argued is Kevin O'Connell. Now, Kevin O'Connell won the division last year. They won 13 games in Minnesota. Of course, they got bounced in the first round of the playoffs, and you could make the argument Kevin O'Connell shouldn't be ahead of Dan Campbell because the Lions led the Vikings in the two games that they played head-to-head this year for every minute of the game except for 45 seconds at the end of the first game in week three in Minnesota when the Vikings scored a late touchdown to win after Campbell elected to go with the long Austin Seibert field goal. Now, so you could say, well, the Lions dominated the Vikings in both those games, which arguably they did. Of course, winning the one at Ford Field later in the year, being up the entire time in Minnesota before gagging away that game. But in that game, if you recall, Kevin O'Connell outcoached Dan Campbell. Kevin O'Connell, the play calling at the end was fantastic. The receiver that was wide open at the end of the game. The Lions' decision, Dan Campbell's decision on numerous occasions in that game to go for it on fourth down, then to try the Seibert long field goal, which was a disaster. And Campbell admitted kind of after the game that he let his team down. But you could say, who's done a better job? Kevin O'Connell, when he inherited the Vikings, inherited Justin Jefferson, Kirk Cousins, Dalvin Cook, Eric Kendricks, Harrison Smith, a lot of really, really good players. What Dan Campbell took over in Detroit was a bleep show roster in a rebuild. And after 2 years, he's got him with a winning record, and now they're the favorites to win the division. But I'm not putting Dan Campbell ahead of Kevin O'Connell because, again, Kevin O'Connell has won a division. And last year in that game in Minnesota, sorry, Kevin O'Connell did a better job than Dan Campbell. Head to head. Yes, I know they split the regular season series, but that did take place. But what do you think? Do you think Dan Campbell at 16 is the right call? Again, I don't know who else you would take out ahead of Dan Campbell or have Dan Campbell go ahead of, other than arguably O'Connell. Well, Daboll's only been there 1 year. Giants went to the playoffs last year. Yes, Campbell beat Daboll. I get that. Okay, but I still, the job he did last year in New York was spectacular. It was. You're not taking Campbell ahead of Sean McVay, Zach Taylor, Mike Vrabel. Zach Taylor's taking the Bengals to the Super Bowl. After Campbell, like I mentioned, LaFleur, Smith, Rivera, Staley, McCarthy, McDermott. Wait, that one is interesting. Sean McDermott at 22. All Buffalo does every year is win. Now they gag at the end. But Sean McDermott, 22? That's an indictment. Ross Tucker is hating on Sean McDermott. I put Sean McDermott ahead of Dan Campbell. Buffalo's won divisions, multiple. Kevin Stefanski, Frank Reich, Robert Saleh, Todd Bowles, Dennis Allen, Matt Eberflus, Josh McDaniels, Shane Steichen, D'Amico Ryans, and Jonathan Gannon. The last three are last on the list because they have not, obviously, coached a game yet. So really, it's a list of 29 coaches. Josh McDaniels is last. Andy Reid is first. I think Dan Campbell being around 16 is the right call. I do. Actually, I put Sean McDermott ahead of him. I'm not a Ron Rivera fan. Mike McCarthy at 21. Yeah, from a resume standpoint, of course, Mike McCarthy's got a street named after him outside of Lambeau Field. He won a Super Bowl at the Packers. But right now, if you're ranking the coaches now, Mike McCarthy, they always fail in Dallas, and they have a ton of talent. But Dan Campbell at 16, I think, is about right. What's going to be interesting is this season. The expectations are there, and Campbell has said it, and I've loved some of his quotes lately. They know that there's a target on their backs. They know that the hype train is real. The league put them in prime time for the opener. Prime time. Can they handle the excitement? Can they handle the spotlight? This team's going to be playing a ton of night games. Everybody's picking them to win the NFC North. Can they handle it? And that's going to be on the coach to get them ready, to not think their britches are too big, and to continue to out-scheme the other team, especially in the second half of the season last year, and utilize what you have with Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn and that defense get a whole lot better. And the decision-making by Dan Campbell, all of the gambling, the fourth downs, I think he's got to be a little bit smarter, especially early in the season. Can't just go for it on every fourth down. I like that he's a gambler. I like that they fake punt. I like a lot of these things. But some games when it's like they're not even using Jack Fox and they put their defense in a bad spot, Campbell has got to tone that down a little bit. No one's arguing what he's done from a culture perspective. 16 out of 32 sounds about right. Again, McDermott behind him, I don't understand. All right, coming up next, this guy is in great shape. What does this mean for the defensive line? We will get into that right here on Locked On Lions. First, though, we got to tell you about our friends at Built Bar. If you're looking for a delicious snack, something you want to snack on in the mornings, maybe for breakfast, get some protein, that's what I do, you got to try Built Bars. Built Bars and Built Puffs are absolutely amazing. If you haven't had the marshmallow puffs, They're awesome. I got the coconut brownie chunk puffs coming to my house any day now, and I'm excited. I went to built.com. I put in locked15 in the promo code, and we're good to go. I got 15% off of my order. What makes Built Bar so good? Well, for starters, they're all covered in 100% real dark chocolate. That's right, real chocolate. Tastes really good, and they're only 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and a whopping 17 grams of protein. A lot of people think they taste like a candy bar. Well, they do taste like a candy bar, but they're better for you. And some of these other protein bars are bad. Built Bars are really, really good. Stop by Walmart today and get them there, and also at Sam's Club or at built.com. So a couple of years ago, Brad Holmes. That was a Freudian slip. My apologies. A couple of years ago, Brad Holmes drafted two defensive tackles back to back, Levi Onwuzurike and then Aleem McNeil. One hasn't played in a couple of years because of the back injury in Onwuzurike, who was the second round pick, and then Aleem McNeil was the third round pick. And Aleem McNeil has been very, very solid. There's been some games where you don't call his name as much or his number as much. But the one thing that I think the Lions wanted to see more of for the first 2 years from Aleem McNeil is probably the sack numbers to be a little bit higher, and maybe just the giddy up a little bit in getting to the quarterback. He has been really, really good against the run. He's been solid, and he's a very, very good leader and a guy that everybody in that locker room really, really likes. Aleem McNeil was recently on the Lions podcast, the team podcast, with Tim Twentyman. Forgot the name of the pod, but shout out to Tim. And he said that he's transformed his body, and he's cut 13% body fat. Cut 13%. Changed his diet. He's gotten into better shape for his body to be transformed. Quote, this is what the transformation was for, if I'm really being honest with you, is to be able to rush the passer like I want to. That's really what the transformation was for. Just so I could be a better football player for the Lions, be able to do everything I need to do. So Aleem McNeil is doing yoga, red meatless diet. He is feeling very good. 2 years with the Lions, he only has 3 sacks. Now, he's gotten to the quarterback a little bit. He's done all right. But last year, he was about 325 pounds. And, he's still around there now, it sounds like. But I love this attitude. I love the fact that Aleem McNeil just continues to want to get better. And he's been pretty solid. All right, maybe unspectacular, but solid. But to cut down all that body fat, to be leaner on the interior, what does that mean for the rest of the defensive line? That's a very good question. Because while you want him to get to the quarterback and be that nuisance that can rush the passer and be a force on the interior, the one thing I liked about Aleem McNeil, especially in the Green Bay game in Week 18 and kind of later in the year, the Jets game too, he had a good game, is the fact that his big body sometimes can take up some space. I think the one thing that the Lions are missing, and of course they could have solved this and they elected not to with Jalen Carter, but I still think the Lions need that big-bodied defensive tackle, somebody that can take up some space. We know about the big guy Martin that they drafted in the fourth round this year, Broderick Martin, who's a space eater. How much is he going to play, though, is the question. How ready is he? But McNeil, being more of a dominant pass rush type of, nose tackle, what will that mean for how he can handle the centers and the guards when it comes to the run? Will it help him that he can shed blockers? Or is by taking off some of this weight, will that hinder him against the run? It remains to be seen. But this guy is determined to get to the quarterback. And I love that. It's a passing league. You got to have an interior rush to really, bother the other team's quarterback. Look, think about the guys that they're going up against the most. Kirk Cousins, when the rush is coming on the interior to him, happy feet, sails balls on throws. Justin Fields, all right. I love that guys can come around the end and try to get him. But if you can get that interior rush on Justin Fields and force him to the outside, where the Lions have had more have more speed now on the outside defensively than they've had in years, is a positive. And then Jordan Love, of course, who nobody knows what you're going to get with him. He's a complete roll of the dice. But you want to get to Jordan Love, bust him inside. You know, look, Jared Goff, it's the same thing. When the interior rush comes, that's when he has had his problems. But I commend Lee McNeil. I think that's awesome. Guy's in shape, wants to get the job done. And the Lions have some good depth along that D-line. I'm excited to see what Josh Pascal looks like. I'm excited to see how they use Kaminsky. Covington, who they got from the Chargers, can help. Might not be the strength of the defense yet, the interior of the D-line, but what if a Lee McNeil turns into a, I'm not going to say it, but an Ndamukong Suh light type, right? There's only one Suh. And by the way, when you drive on the highway and you see the Lions 90-year billboards, don't you think of Suh? Every time I see that big giant 90, it reminds me of Ndamukong Suh, who, by the way, is still a free agent. But he's not going to go to training camp. But Ndamukong Suh is going to sign with somebody in October, and it's going to be a team that is winning. What if it's the Lions? Would you take Suh back? I don't want to do this topic now. I would take him back in a second. I've always been a big Ndamukong Suh fan. All right, Lions social media is posting about somebody at OTAs. We'll do that next. Yesterday we had Trevor Sikkema on from PFF, and I asked him about the disappointment that has been Jameson Williams so far. Now again, to be fair, the Lions now second-year wide receiver. Last year, of course, was coming back from a torn ACL. The Lions had him rehab very, very slowly. J-Mo had said at this time last year, I'm going to be ready for training camp. He wasn't even ready until Thanksgiving this year. All right, the Lions slow played this immensely just to make sure that he had time. So he comes back, obviously, as the one touchdown catch. They ran that reverse with him, and pretty much that was it. Didn't play a whole heck of a lot. After the season, Brad Holmes talked about accountability. J-Mo's social media, which I'm not going to touch on too much, but again, a lot of fans are always hitting me up. Social media isn't the best at times. He looks like a kid that's a little immature, and of course now busted for the gambling and suspended the first six games. Jameson Williams is allowed to work out during OTAs. He'll be there for mandatory minicamp. He'll be there for training camp. He can play in the preseason. Today, and even last week a little bit, Lions are starting to push J-Mo a little bit. Right? Starting to pump him up from a media relations standpoint. Today, they posted a video on their Twitter. Toe tap. Jameson Williams catches a ball on the sidelines, makes a great athletic play, and then puts both feet down in bounds. I think you're going to see more of this. I think the Lions want to squash the narrative, which, unfortunately, part of it was their own doing. When Brad Holmes said, we need accountability, from both sides. It's obvious the Lions didn't love what J-Mo brought to the table last year when he got healthy, because he didn't play. Josh Reynolds was taking his snaps. DJ Chark was taking his snaps. Right? We couldn't wait for the first J-Mo game, remember? At home. You wait. Oh, then he gets into one play. Oh, you wait. And it's like, why isn't he playing? I wanted to see him. But he wasn't working as hard as some of these other guys who had earned their stripes. Now he's going to be 6 weeks behind. But you see on the videos that the team is putting out from OTAs just how athletic and talented he is. The question's going to be, will it translate on the field? Does he get it? I understand he's handing out cash in the city in the middle of the day to some kids in his car. That's on Instagram. You know, I don't know if the Lions are going to say anything to him about his social media and how at times it looks immature. But you know what? If he comes out in week 7, scores a couple of touchdowns, no one's going to care. This is an immensely talented guy. And what we'll tell you as well how they feel about him is if they go after a DeAndre Hopkins or sign another receiver, or if they just wait and wait for J-Mo to kind of arrive in week 7. You already got a top 15 receiver in the game, and Amon-Ra St. Brown. But J-Mo getting some hype from the Lions social media team, not a surprise to me at all. That'll do it for us here on this Wednesday into Thursday edition of Locked On Lions. Thanks for checking us out, making us your first listen. Thanks to our everydayers. We're back again tomorrow.